Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Amelia Bradshaw, HR Director at Inviqua. First things first, you've got to be a little bit crazy to be in HR and deal with people all day long.
Possibly.
So what compelled you to get into HR and managing people? You must have a lot of patience.
I kind of got into it by accident. It wasn't what I did for my undergraduate degree. So I think like a lot of kind of students, I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I chose my degree. And I did my initial degree in public relations. And then I sort of very quickly decided that I finished the degree, but that probably wasn't for me. And I was working for a company as an office manager doing sort of little bits and pieces of their HR. And they were acquired and they really wanted somebody who knew a bit about the culture to take on the full-time HR. So that's kind of how I got into HR. And then I sort of fell in love with it as a profession. I think HR is really, really misunderstood as a profession. People, unless you're in HR, it's easy to not kind of properly understand it or see it either as maybe sort of an administrative thing or to kind of see it as this sort of terribly Machiavellian thing, or even just to see it as this kind of warm and fluffy kind of shoulder to cry on without really understanding it.
I mean, I think that there are some common perceptions about HR. But I think, how do you feel it's at the point where it is mostly misunderstood?
I think it depends who it is who's doing the misunderstanding. Sometimes it depends what stage of their career they're at as well. And sometimes as well, what time of day it is. You know, they can go through these various different perceptions. What I would say is I think that management, really top senior management, has to be on board with getting the perception of HR across. And of course, HR departments themselves have to be really, really prepared to get the message across of what HR does. Yeah, that's something that I'm trying to work on as well. I think we're all kind of in HR guilty of that we kind of get our heads down, just sometimes get on with doing the job. And we don't always think about how others are perceiving us and perceiving what we're doing. And sometimes telling people what you're doing because of the confidential nature of some of the things, you know, you can't actually say, well, hey, you know, I've been working on, you know, getting this person a pay rise or helping them with this promotion, because obviously, you know, there are sensitive things around that and you can't tell someone. So you just kind of say, well, I'm working on something and, you know, it just is what it is.
So do you place a major importance on that then? Being transparent with people. I mean, I know HR kind of covers everyone, so it's a little bit different, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But do you think it is massively important that people have a strong understanding about what it is you're actually doing? You know, you could be doing a fantastic job, and I suppose the people who you report to, as long as they're happy, you know, it's all good. But do you especially place an importance on, regardless who they are, they know exactly what your purpose is? Because I suppose within HR, everyone is kind of your responsibility in some ways.
Yeah, and I think for the general employee, if they don't properly understand what they can get out of HR, then HR is probably not doing its purpose and it's not helping them as much as it could be. you know, I think people need HR all the way through their career. So HR is just to help through the entire lifespan. I've come across HR departments through my own network that, you know, really are very remote from the employee and don't get involved, you know, other than the employee sort of coming to them and saying, hey, you need to do something. But I prefer kind of HR departments that are far more proactive and going out there and talking to people and trying to say, well, actually, how can we help you with your career? And trying to get the message across so the employee does understand that you're there for them.
Yeah, I think one area as well, I think, is really important with HR is new managers. A lot, especially within IT and tech, you know, a lot of the work that I've been involved in the past, what seems to be the natural progression is people do a tremendous job on the tools, for a lack of a better term, and then they get to a point and it's like, right, the next level is a managerial position. And it's not a natural progression for most people. It's actually like a completely different job in a lot of respects. But I still find that a lot of organizations feel that that's the correct move. The person who's the most successful then becomes the manager. And that's not the case. That's an instance where I think, you know, HR is a tremendous amount of value because they can kind of work along with the managers and help them with the different scenarios that they'll face. I mean, the things with HR are the amount of variables that you would occur because, you know, inevitably people are literally the most unpredictable commodity on the planet. So there's no way to kind of prepare yourself unless you have a lot of experience for the number of different scenarios that you come across. So, you know, that as an example, I would think is something that people don't initially think about. When they think of HR, it's kind of working along with managers and people who are transforming into different positions or kind of pivoting into different roles where it requires, you know, people management. You know, I mean, I suppose this is just an opportunity to really kind of highlight some of these areas and that must make you feel good. And that's the kind of work that, you know, you are interested in. What particular kind of projects compel you? And I suppose originally, what got you invested into HR and wanting to continue it and decide that this was my career? What, you know, kind of projects?
It's quite interesting that, you know, you talk about that. I mean, we see often, you know, as a new HR person, if you come into a company, you will see cases of people having been promoted into a managerial position when maybe they don't necessarily have the capability to do that. And it is a question of trying then to train them. I'd like an ideal world for HR to be a little bit more strategic and maybe helping to make the decisions about how managers are selected rather than sort of having to deal with that very kind of reactive situation of, okay, we've got someone here. But of course, there are situations where, you know, you've got someone and they're kind of going, ah, and then you have to kind of help them. But certainly all managers, regardless of whether you think they're capable or not, have to be trained and have to be given guidance. But in terms of your second question as to what really kind of got me engaged, I really just found people were incredibly, incredibly interesting. It was, I mean, kind of moving on, you know, from just kind of looking after kind of their personnel records to doing things like recruiting them and sort of going out there and finding people that match specifications and then deciding what those specifications were and then dealing with people's problems. I can't go into sort of, you know, too many details about cases with companies, but I remember in my very early career, I dealt with quite a difficult disciplinary case and I didn't enjoy the, obviously the fact that people were going through this disciplinary, and any HR person will tell you that, you know, when you go through any employee relations issue, it's quite difficult, but it's also that challenging yourself of having to deal with that and deal with it in a very fair and very practical situation, especially when you're dealing with your own stress and trying to manage the stress of the other people. So, you know, it's a kind of challenge that you might be awake in the middle of the night thinking, okay, I need to make sure that this is done and this is done. But it's a good kind of challenge.
The unpredictability of people has got to cause, you know, many sleepless nights for you.
It can.
And, yeah, I mean, how do you kind of manage that as far as in your own head? Because I'm sure that someone who was relatively inexperienced in that kind of position in a HR role, it probably affects you quite a lot in some circumstances. How did you kind of overcome that and kind of learn to deal with things a little bit better?
Well, being in HR now for about 16 years, so I'm trying to kind of cast my mind back. I feel like I'm very long in the tooth with it now, but I've obviously still got a lot of things to learn. You're never too old for that. But kind of going back, I think it was having the support of more experienced HR people. So when I kind of first started out, I was kind of standalone in the company that I was working in, because I was in an acquired company, but I had a HR team in the parent company who were there, and they were always available, and they had a very good employment solicitor that we had on retainer, and she was marvellous. You know, so we'd call her up, and you know, she'd just talk down the phone at me for, you know, an hour, and I learned so much from her. You know, I sort of just got this kind of almost encyclopedic knowledge of employment law from this woman, and it was just wonderful. I don't know if I've still got it, but you know, for a time, you know, she was just really kind of willing to share everything that she knew, and that was just great. So having, you know, the confidence of knowing, okay, this is how we need to do things, and then approaching the situation like that. What I say to my staff now, I mean, I've got a team, and I've taken kind of new HR people through that process of when they sort of first walk in the door with no HR experience, up to a point of, you know, when they're getting up to HR advisor and they've gone through their CIPD qualification. And what I try to say to them as they're kind of growing is just divorce themselves if they possibly can from the stress of the situation. And it's always really important to kind of retain their humanity. If they stop caring about the people and if they stop being affected by it emotionally, then it's probably time to get out of HR, because, you know, you still need to appreciate that people are there and they're still people, but they just have to kind of not take that home with them at night and just be confident that they are doing the right thing and doing everything that they possibly can. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of how I've dealt with it.
Yeah, it's like, I think as the Americans would say, it's like compartmentalizing, isn't it?
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah, and do you feel within your team as well, because of being in HR, it's a sense of responsibility to lead the way that your team dynamics are?
I'd like to think so. I mean, certainly, I think within HR, you have to be, you know, beyond reproach in terms of the rest of the company. You have to be approachable, but also, you know, it wouldn't be appropriate for a member of HR to be, you know, getting horribly drunk. Certainly, you know, go out and socialise, but you don't want to be the one who's, you know, vomiting in a pool outside the, you know, the pub. You have to set.
That was a very specific example.
Well, you know, I've been in HR a long time now. I've seen employees do this.
But I think, you know, to continue on with that, it's, you know, the training aspect of any role is important. You know, we've all had our mentors, but I also think that it's really important to get a kind of a macro perspective on what you're doing as well. And I think with people, it's important to, even outside of the workplace, to get a variety of different experiences, kind of forcing yourself to go outside your comfort zone. And that, in doing that, it allows you to kind of understand different people are much better, I believe. Do you think that to be a strong HR person, there's certain characteristics that you need to have in order to make you successful? I spoke with a lady not too long ago who was telling me kind of that, you know, you can train HR, but the way that you kind of handle people is almost you're kind of born with it. Do you kind of echo those thoughts or?
Not sure that I do, to be honest, because I think if you go down the route of saying that you have to be one type of person, I think that maybe you restrict that in terms of kind of inclusivity. I know HR people who are incredibly different from me. Maybe there are some things around integrity that you need to have, but in terms of your personality, I think there are different personalities that can work very well. Certainly in terms of my HR team, well, it sounds very sort of territorial, doesn't it? My HR team, but the HR team that I work with, I don't own them, I promise. We have a kind of mix of personalities. So, you know, we've got extroverts and we've got introverts there. And both of those personality types work very, very well. So it's just knowing kind of what your strengths are as an individual and how you approach people, how you work best with people, and kind of playing up to that. But as long as you kind of fundamentally have a kind of code of ethics, I think that's what's important.
Is it difficult sometimes? Because obviously as people, we're naturally engaged with a certain type of person that's probably quite similar to ourselves.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to kind of remove yourself from that when dealing with situations?
Yeah, I mean, it can be. That's a completely human thing to do, to kind of fall into the like me trap. If you're aware of that, I think that helps. And certainly, you know, if you're in a situation where you see others favouring people who are similar to themselves, then maybe you have a duty to point that out. You know, certainly, you know, I've been in situations where there are people that I've clicked with more and people that I haven't clicked with more. But in those situations, I feel that I've got an onus to and a responsibility to kind of make sure that I'm being fair and equal. And, you know, there's a truth in that kind of, you know, inherited wisdom that, you know, we've all got something in common. We just have to maybe find out what it is.
Yeah, I think that matters a lot. And that's the willingness to do that, I think you need to have, especially when involved in managing people.
Mm.
I wanted to kind of talk about, so it kind of helps actually that you've been in HR for kind of like 15, 16 years. Mm. Because I think that team dynamics and kind of the expected way in a culture, etc., it almost changes every like kind of 5 to 10 years. What are kind of some of the major changes that you've seen in, you know, cultural and dynamic changes within organizational structures?
I can only speak from my own experience, and I would say that certainly in terms of classic organization structure, kind of when I was first studying my CIPD, there was a big kind of celebration of the matrix organization. And I think you still see that kind of banded about today, but there's maybe a move away from that now, that either matrix organizations are becoming a bit more complex or people are looking for new ways of doing things. In terms of actually organizational culture itself, I've been very much focused in the tech sector for a long time now, for most of my career. And what I've been very pleased about, certainly in maybe the last 3 years, is the increasing drive for diversity. Now, I don't think we're there yet, but there seems to be more and more and more of a focus on that. And I think legislative things like the gender pay gap, you know, bringing that more and more to the forefront. Quite where we're going to go with that, when you look at kind of some of the government figures and some of the reports being published, that I think there was a report, was it Deloitte, that published some kind of guesstimates saying that it was going to be like 2069 before we kind of made the gender pay gap equal. And when you hear things like that, that's a bit depressing. But certainly in terms of Invica, the company that I work for, that diversity drive is really kind of ramping up. And that's really, really lovely to see.
Yeah. And I think tech is certainly a leader in that. There's no question about it. The willingness to have a diverse team and the benefits that that brings, not just in tech teams, but across sectors, is it's almost necessary, isn't it? To have, you know, different experiences, different thoughts. It kind of alludes back to what we were we were saying earlier about people's willingness to go outside the comfort zone. Well, if you have a team made up of people from, you know, a variety of different backgrounds and they collectively collaborate, that's got to be the best formula that you can come up with in those situations.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of business statistics that show that diverse teams are actually far more productive and more profitable as well. They kind of come up with a wider variety of ideas. There's less kind of likelihood of them falling into kind of groupthink traps. But I think people just feel better as well if they kind of say, well, actually, we're not discriminating, or actually, you know, we have a mixed team and, yeah, there's someone from here, there's someone from here, you know, we're equally balanced. But one of the problems with tech, as I'm sure I don't have to tell you, is there's a real shortage of women. And, you know, certainly I can talk about to the technology company that I work for, we do struggle with, you know, people who aren't kind of in their 20s and 30s and white men. And I'd love to see more people from ethnic minorities.
What do you think the, I mean, this is probably a bit above both of us, but what do you think the answers are to, or what do you think some steps are to try and help with that?
Well, the classic step that everybody always bandies about is to go down to kind of grassroots level and, you know, go into schools to make sure that girls are kind of getting the opportunities. And I think that is one solution. I don't think it's the only solution. That's if we're addressing kind of the female shortage. I think one of the big problems that companies face in terms of retaining female talent is just making sure that the culture within the company is right. So just making sure that they eliminate any kind of forms of sexism. I would hope that that doesn't exist with any company, but, you know, you just don't know. You hear kind of horror stories coming out of Silicon Valley. So make sure that that's eliminated. Make sure that women can return to work after maternity leave. Just make it attractive for them, and make sure that there are career paths. I think that would really, really go a long way. And also kind of things around recruitment as well. So maybe make blind recruitment tests, and just ensure that all of your interviewers have interviewing training, so that they're not kind of subject to any bias whatsoever, or in an ideal world, they're not anyway.
And I think one thing you kind of mentioned briefly earlier about, you know, retaining women, I think that, beyond that, retention of this current generation is a particularly difficult thing to achieve. There's obviously it's a lot more willingness to kind of move after 12 months now. It's not as frowned upon as it used to be. So that must have been a big shift, and something that you're constantly battling with at the moment, and have been probably for a number of years now. Is that obviously so? I mean, I guess I already said it. Is that something that you're kind of working to fight against? And if so, what actions are you looking to take?
I think at Invica, we do reasonably well in terms of retention rates. It does vary from city to city. And one of the things that we've done to try and ensure that people stay is to offer them career path and career diversity. It's also to try and identify signs of flight risk. But by offering people alternatives to their career, it's kind of a good way of, maybe if someone was a developer, for instance, and they were thinking, hey, I really, really want to be a project manager, rather than having to go and seek that opportunity elsewhere, we have systems in place which would allow them to start shadowing sort of experienced project managers and then gradually move into that discipline. So as a way of kind of retaining internal talent like that, and making sure that we're doing internal recruitment. But definitely, you know, if you want to hold with the generational theory, with the millennial generation, I think we are going to see an increase in turnover rates. But not all turnover is bad. You do need some kind of movement through the workforce. You can't have everyone staying for 15 years. It's just finding that right level.
Yeah, and do you think it's necessarily a bad thing that, you know, from outside of the HR room, do you think it's necessarily a bad thing that people feel that it's okay to jump around as much as they do?
It depends, again, on the role. If, you know, from a purely business point of view, if you're paying really expensive recruitment fees for somebody, so, you know, if you're paying, you know, maybe 20, 30% for somebody and they're in a senior position, then I would hope that they're staying for more than 12 months because, you know, that's a massive investment. So, you know, to try and get, you know, your money back after they've gotten up to speed, then maybe the onus is on the company to try and keep that person interested. But one of the worst things to do would be to keep somebody for longer than, you know, their interest. So, you know, once they've kind of switched off emotionally, then it's really time to say goodbye. So it varies from case to case. But if you're, as a company, you are seeing that people are just leaving uniformly after 12 months, I'd say, you know, it's time to really make sure that you are looking closely at your exit interviews, looking at, you know, any exit questionnaires you're doing and find out what the common themes are and why people are going.
It's an interesting one, but the one thing it always seems to come back to for me is a company's willingness to actually listen and this like open, you know, openness and making employees feel like their voice is heard. It's a very simple thing to do, but one that many, many organizations don't seem to get right. But I think the very fact that people just want to feel appreciated, people want to feel, you know, part of something, they want, you know, to feel like their work is valuable. And if you just listen and communicate and allow them to have a voice, it seems that that helps so much, and people's willingness to stay will only increase with that. You know, why is it that so many organizations struggle with that?
Maybe, and I, you know, can only speculate, it's that they're worried about what they will hear. So, you know, it's, they're kind of, you know, worried about getting feedback. That's quite a nerve-wracking experience. Or maybe it's that they are listening and they're just not doing very much. So people can give feedback, but then if nobody does anything about their feedback, their patience is going to run out after a time. So, you know, if somebody says, well, actually, you need to do something about the seating arrangement in this office, or you need to do something about my career path, and nothing happens about that, then, you know, how long is their patience going to last for? 6 months and they're gone.
I'd like to get kind of the most important lessons you learn and the things that you hold most true and kind of, you know, religiously carry out, you know, throughout a day-to-day basis with your role, and what would be, what are they, and maybe why are they so important to you?
Well, every day for me is different depending on what's going on, but the things that I really try to adhere to in everything are being honest, fair, and transparent. If you're not being fair, then I think, you know, you're in the wrong job. So sometimes in HR, you do have to make difficult decisions, and I'd be lying if I said that wasn't the case. You know, sometimes you do have to let people go. And from a HR point of view, I try to justify that to myself by saying, well, actually, if somebody's not right for this business, then it's unfair to keep them here. They should go to somewhere where they are better suited. But whatever you do, you just need to treat people with respect, and you need to be honest with them and not try and hide things from them or deceive them in any way.
I like it. That's a great point to finish on. Thank you for that, Amelia. Really enjoyed that, and absolutely brilliant insights from HR. I think people are really going to learn a lot from that. Even if you're not in HR, there's some key lessons to be learned there, regardless of industry, as you know, everyone has to manage people. So thank you for taking the time, Amelia. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud. Or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.